We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
It's what we've been waiting for.
It's Friday.
TGIF.
And that can only mean one thing.
The weekend is landing.
It's time for the Reardon Round Table.
Yes, that is correct.
Now, here's your host, Mark Reardon, on KMOX.
All right, here we go. Friday Reardon Roundtable. We are set. The panel is fresh off enjoying lots of adult beverages, and they're ready to go. Let me introduce Jane Duker back with us this afternoon. Hi, Jane.
I need some adult beverages.
Well, we can work that out. Yeah. We can work that out. Jack Cardetti is back with us this afternoon, Democrat strategist. Hello, Jack. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good afternoon.
Tight Mind Strategies and the founder of Atlas Strategy Group. On the other side of the equation, Greg Keller.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Otherwise known as The Hair.
The Hair.
He's known as The Hair, too. You've been revved up on Twitter lately, haven't you?
Been a little fired up, yeah.
He's taken my place.
Well, this all started for you, I think, with the Kavanaugh hearings, and you never slowed down after that, right?
Yeah, I mean, frankly, I don't think many Republicans or conservatives have. I mean, it was the most disgusting thing I've seen in my political lifetime, and I think that it's going to radicalize a lot of Republican political operatives for a long time to come. It was shameful and pathetic and disgusting.
So let's start with something off politics, because the number one thing that everyone in St. Louis is talking about is Paul Goldschmidt, and here's what he said this morning.
Yeah, I mean, you come in here as a player, and the first thing that sticks out is the atmosphere here. The fans are so great. You know, it's sold out pretty much every night, if not every night, and that's the culture here of the fans and the organization. They expect a lot of their players, so it was always a fun place to play, and I don't know if I just imagine myself playing in that, but just enjoyed coming here and appreciate the fans and the way this organization, you know, goes about its business. The players that, you know, now are my teammates. It was fun to compete against them, and looking forward to learning from all of them and being part of the team.
So our own Chris Raby had a chance to sit down with Paul over at the stadium a short time ago. I'm going to air that interview. It's about a 12-minute interview at 3:30 this afternoon, because we don't have any opportunity to do it tonight. I want people to hear it. So that's coming up a little bit later. But Jane, I'll start with you. I mean, I think we were all hoping for something tucked under the Christmas tree here.
Absolutely.
With Paul Goldschmidt's name pretty much rising to the top outside of Bryce Harper. But that was pretty welcome news a couple of days ago, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, we just, you know, hey, we need our hope. We need to get through from now until spring training. So this was a badly needed boost. And, you know, we needed a bat and we're going to get one. And I think it shows a commitment that they're going to try to make an effort to improve on last year.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that. You know, it's funny because Greg, I don't think I've heard anyone this week say this was a bad deal for the Cardinals.
No, not at all. I mean, I guess there's some concern that maybe we only have him for a year.
Right.
But he hit all the right notes that I saw in the press conference, wore a suit and tie, which I certainly enjoyed. I mean, he did wear tennis shoes with a suit and tie. I'm going to let that slide. But other than that, I thought his performance was absolutely spot on. Very excited.
He might have forgotten the shoes. In fairness to Paul, I don't know. Maybe he was, you know, grabbing things and just forgot the dress shoes.
This is coming from a guy in 20 degree weather that isn't wearing socks right now. Okay.
Well, that's a valid point. Huh? That is a valid point.
I tell you,
I don't know anyone who wears socks with their loafers. I mean, I've never seen that before.
Well, you shouldn't be wearing loafers in December. How about that?
Country Club Republicans have to keep up a certain image here, right?
I'm wearing a fleece.
I mean, but it's Vineyard Vine.
It's a fleece, Jane. Oh. It's a fleece.
Vineyard Vine and his drying moccasins.
That was the line of the week, Jane Duker, right there. The line of the week. I love that. Yeah,
well,
we got to work on
that. There's the Mary I Republicans like Greg, and then there's, you know, the Mary K Republicans that he has to
Cardetti
to play
weighing
with.
In on Paul Goldschmidt here before we spend the whole hour talking about Keller's fashion.
We haven't won a World Series since we had that huge big bat in the middle of the lineup that other teams fear. We've had great teams since then, but we've never had that player that the other teams fear.
And you know what's interesting
is
his name, that other guy you're talking about, his name has been brought up by Tony La Russa this week and a couple other folks saying this is the closest they've seen to Albert, which is interesting.
Because not only is he a big bat, Gold Glove Award winner, so I think he checks a lot of boxes. He'll be happy here in St. Louis, and I think the fans will really show him the love.
Well, the folks from Arizona that we checked in with this week have said great things about how, you know, he becomes a part of the community. And this will kind of follow, in theory, the Matt Holliday plan. You sign him. He's a free agent after next year. You try to extend him if it's a good fit. I can't imagine it's not going to be a good fit. The question now is, what else are the Cardinals going to do? They need to shore up the bullpen a little bit. I'd love for them to have, I know Matt Carpenter is probably going to be the third baseman, but would it shock you if Matt Carpenter was traded from this team? I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility.
I think it's a great 1-2 combination. I'd love to see him stick around. I tell you what, the other big news on sports recruiting of the week, though, is Kelly Bryant, new quarterback, Mizzou. Really huge news
there.
Well,
that's on my list. So we'll do politics, but these are big things for the region and the Kelly Bryant transfer. I don't know how you felt. Jack lives in Columbia, so you're tight with the university and everything. But I just, because I'm doom and gloom Mizzou guy, and we see what happens, I just didn't think it was going to happen. And maybe that was good because I built up my expectations, and I thought, even that day, I'm like, you know what? It ain't going to happen. And I started getting texts. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Now, I felt that way about the Porters, too, and we know what happened there, so we'll have to see. But yeah, that's huge, and you get a kid from Arkansas. Barry Odom gets, I think at this point, you have to say, a deserved extension and a raise.
Yeah, nobody wants to play Mizzou at the moment, and I think that'll translate over to next year. Glad to see them give a raise and extension to a coach that's worked really hard and is really hitting the recruiting trail hard.
And it was just midway through the season that friends of ours, Mizzou friends of ours, were calling for Barry Odom's head. He's really turned it around.
By that you mean perhaps
me. Say you specifically.
I never called for his head. I never said that, but I did say, well, you might have to look at it at this point. That's for sure.
There aren't any other SEC coaches that are doing more with less right now. And I think that once you start that recruiting pipeline
in
here, it's really the best days are ahead of us.
I was worried about him next year. I'm like, uh-oh. I mean, because even if he, you know, made the most out of what little he had, I'm like, what is next year? And so,
well, this team, I'm going to go on the record as saying this team will be ranked next year preseason, probably like 24 or 25, mm-hmm. but they have a lot of returning starters. And it's not only Kelly Bryant, but that obviously adds to the mix. If they win the bowl game, they're going to head in on, you know, a lot of positive momentum. The basketball team is almost surprising me just a little bit right now, Cardetti, because
watch it.
Winning a few games. You got a big game with Illinois coming up here and Xavier later this month. Things are coming together here, and we're bearing the lead. We are bearing the lead here. Ladies and gentlemen,
I'm afraid what?
We are now going to be, in theory, if the MLS thing comes together, we're going to be a four. Jane. We're going to be a four sport town. The XFL.
XFL.
Oh, right.
XFL is coming to St. Louis.
It was either that or tractor pulls that were going to go in the dome. So I'm XFL. Okay. So, I mean, did Kurt Warner play for the XFL?
Arena League.
He was Arena League. Arena League. Okay. I was looking for what sort of second tier football.
You're mixing him up with that guy named He Hate Me. Remember he had the name on the back of his jersey said He Hate Me?
Yeah.
Well, I think you might get
is that what it is?
Mixed up with him.
So where does the XFL play?
I have no idea.
Presumably.
Okay. I was really pushing for the lingerie league because I think that would have been a lot more entertaining, personally. Jane, you might not have agreed with that, but maybe
not,
you would have. I think it's more entertaining than the XFL, that's
puppy
for sure.
Puppy league, that would be fine.
Now, we were here a week ago. Jane was here. You guys weren't on the panel, but obviously the MLS plan is moving forward. It cleared the Board of Aldermen, and I had Carolyn Kendall Betts on yesterday talking about this. This ownership group is excited. We had the announcement of the women's national team coming back to Busch Stadium. So, a lot of, when you're looking at sports and things like that here in St. Louis, things are going well in the state of Missouri right now.
I tell you, St. Louis and Missouri sports have had a lot better week than Donald Trump has. It's been a really good week.
Yeah,
well, that might make a good segue as we take our first break here. We'll come back. Greg Keller, Jack Cardetti, Jane Duker, all on the panel this afternoon. And we have much more of the Reardon Roundtable coming up here on KMOX. I just want to mention also in the next hour, Stephanie Barron is an actress who is from St. Louis, and she has a new movie out, Big Kill, which is going to play tonight at the Chesterfield Marcus. And there's a chance to meet her and Scott Martin, not only her director, but her husband. And then I mentioned the Paul Goldschmidt interview that Chris did. That's coming up in the 3 as well.
This is the Reardon Roundtable with your host, Mark Reardon, on KMOX.
Throw a little Christmas music in here as we're getting closer. It's Reardon Roundtable for Friday. Jane Duker in a very poofy coat today.
Oh, yeah.
Looks comfortable.
Snuggled in.
It is way too cold right now. Way too cold. Jack Cardetti is here and Greg Keller. Now, I have a bunch of things on my list to talk about, but I was explaining this earlier this afternoon to somebody who stopped by the station. I said, oftentimes things change rapidly since Donald J. Trump has been in office. And Greg pointed out there was a recent tweet. So let's break this down just a little bit with the previous. So Rex Tillerson broke bad on the president, right? That's never a good idea if you don't want to be tweeted about. Yeah. So the response came fast and furious, and this is what he said, Greg, right?
Just 13 minutes ago from the President of the United States, quote, Mike Pompeo is doing a great job. I am very proud of him. His predecessor, Rex Tillerson, didn't have the mental capacity needed. He was dumb as a rock, and I couldn't get rid of him fast enough. He was lazy as hell. Now it's a whole new ballgame. Great spirit at stake.
I'm sorry. You know what?
Keller, you don't even know how to respond to that one, right?
That is, wow. Well, but you know what? You know, when somebody tells the truth that you're trying to get your staff to break the law, that's how he responds. He's circling the drain.
You know, I've seen a couple of people this week even say that for maybe 3 minutes, the president acted presidential a couple of times this week. But the tweets have come. I don't know what to say about that. You know, you guys keep saying he's getting nervous. What? I don't see that.
They've interviewed his chief of staff, and John Kelly's leaving, and that's really bad. But and it doesn't going to replace him.
Well, John Kelly, by the way, there was a denial of that earlier.
Okay, well, they're not on speaking terms, evidently. Yeah.
Well, would it surprise me? No. I think he's probably going. We'll talk about there's a Missouri connection to that in a moment. But go ahead, Jack.
I mean, doesn't it really come back to the fact that the president of the United States, leader of the free world right now, has the thinnest skin of any person in America?
Oh, my God. Yeah, you want his finger on the
when
button.
He promised he would bring the best and brightest into his cabinet. I don't know that actually happened, and this next round of appointments he's about to make, I think, proved that out.
Well, see, that's a very good point, because I spent a lot of time before this election, and people would call here, and they would say, look, we get the flaws, don't worry about it, we're not worried, because he's going to hire the best people. Well, there have been, I don't know how many examples of people that even he has agreed weren't the best people. So, essentially, most people you have in leadership roles, coaches in baseball and managers, the buck stops at the top, right? It doesn't ever happen that way here.
Yeah, I see it a little differently than you guys. I see this as something straight out of Peter Drucker. I mean, I think that that really highly effective managers put people in place and have, you know, systems of accountability in place. And when people fail to live up to that accountability, I think they call them out publicly. I think this is, you know, something straight out of John Wooden.
Oh, wait, bless
you. What?
He can't even defend. He's laughing even. I mean, look, I mean, the two most competent people, Rex Tillerson and Nikki Haley, are both gone. That should tell you something. John Kelly is right on. I mean, look, this is devolving. And so now we're going to Fox News to get like these Hollywood Fox News celebrities to be UN ambassadors.
Well, we'll get to that in a second. But here's the difficulty for the president moving forward, because it's just the way the economy works with cycles is you're no doubt probably going to have a slowdown because it's been red hot. So the Dow is down 570 points, was down 700. Now, yesterday this happened too, and they rallied. It was only, an 80-point loss. But if the economy cools off, if you don't have all these things to be boasting about that are very good, and I still think this is a great economy, that's going to be an interesting time for this president, because what will he say then?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, these aren't short. The Dow today and this week isn't a short-term thing. I mean, the Dow is lower today than it was a year ago when the tax cuts passed.
Right.
The tax cuts were a sugar high that helped very briefly, and now we're going to see the downside of that. And as a result, the long-term is going to be the debt.
Look, you don't know that we're going to see the downside of that. I don't think. I had Dave Simons on.
The market's freaking out for a reason. They're worried about the underpinnings of this economy, and they realize that the tax cuts were not. And when you go to the market and try to lie to them that you're actually got this tariff war under control and you don't, then the market really freaks out. They're starting to figure out that this guy, it's just not going to happen.
But Mark, what you say is true. I think there's a chance Donald Trump is the first president since Jimmy Carter to run for re-election during the middle of a recession.
I think that could happen.
Well, you know, that's what the Democrats want. The fact of the matter is that
by the way, that would have to be a pretty quick turnaround on a recession, because let's not forget that, you know, are we going to hit 3.5% growth like we did this last quarter? Probably not. Okay.
Yeah.
But that's a pretty good number. It never really happened before with President Obama. And again, I give him a break for the first couple of years. But after that, there was no economic recovery. But wait, so on the well, now, Kelly, you made me lose my train of thought because I was going to say something.
Well, I was
and
just
going to
say that you know, even when you do take out the Great Recession, Barack Obama, including the Great Recession, averaged real GDP growth during the 8 years of his presidency of 1.7%, which is pathetic. When you take out the Great Recession,
with a couple of quarters in negative territory. And when you take that out,
he was still at 1.9%. He's the worst economic president in American history.
So my point was going to be, before I forgot, which is easy, is that in order to, is it two or three quarters of negative growth that define the recession? So, yeah, are things going to cool off next year? Then we're into 2020, an election year. Will it be a recession? I don't think it's going to be a recession. No. I think it's going to be a cooling off. Now, will a recession come early in that next term? Very well could.
If this tariff war does not get worked out,
it's going to get worked out.
Oh, okay. Well, he keeps slapping them in the face. I don't know.
It's all part of the negotiation.
I think we can all agree, though, the tax cuts did not help the economy.
I disagree.
How can you agree on that?
We're lower. The Dow is lower today
than it was
a year ago.
That doesn't mean that it's not good for the economy. So investors are taking a little bit of a safer route with bonds because they know what I just said. They know that these things are cyclical. They're going to cool off for just a little bit. When these things drop, buyers come in and they'll rate. I don't think there's
even in the bond market, there's inversion this
Absolutely.
Week. I mean,
well, yeah.
there is some problematic signs that Donald Trump real. Because remember, Donald Trump has run as he's the smartest. We made bad deals before. Put him in charge. He's a businessman. He'll get the economy humming again.
But I don't understand why you guys are so vehemently opposed to leaving money, more money in people's paychecks. Why do you hate that so much?
No, I just think the middle class ought to get some of that. And he thought that the middle class should get some, and he just hasn't.
Well, who's the middle class?
Talking about that.
That's a serious question. Who's the middle class?
Not the billionaires.
Jane, that's not answering the question.
That's
who is the middle
question.
Class?
I think we need to reevaluate that.
Is someone who makes six figures middle class or not? Is that upper middle class? Family of four, sending kids to college, maybe they make $1.50 combined. Is that middle class? I think it probably is
at
this point.
That's upper middle class, technically.
I mean, if you look at the population, I mean, that's way up on the food chain, $150,000.
I'm just enjoying our Democrat friends sitting here and pining away for the economic days of Barack Obama when we had 9% unemployment and GDP growth of 1.5%. I just think that's really cute that you guys are doing that.
It's really cute that this guy made all these promises and they're not coming true.
Lowest.
And actually the people who are the most worried, it's being reflected in the market as they're realizing that this has no underpinning. And that's
you guys,
be a problem.
When the market was just on fire, and the market's not going to be, look, we've had a bull market for a long time now. Mm-hmm. That is one thing that has been rolling along, you know,
and now they
going
figured out
before
that
2 years ago.
A poke.
How do we know that? I mean, there are investors that are cooling off. You could have a month from now a situation where things are red hot again. You don't know.
Well,
I mean, you could have, it could be worse because we could have something that happens internationally.
The people with the money always know. They always know. And they know when the market is getting skittish. And they know why. And they realize that the tax cut was not the promise it was supposed to be. And now we figured out that what's the next plan? More deficit spending? That's going to be, what
well,
is his
you know
plan?
What, you're, wait, can
no
I explain?
No infrastructure bill yet. No,
Jane,
no bills that have helped the economy.
Do you know what your party's plan is to improve the economy? And if it was a Democrat Senate, they want to raise taxes. Do you think raising taxes is a good idea
well,
right
they
now?
They want to redistribute them and have the middle
class. Yeah, of course.
Class,
you want to take money from people
class,
who earn it and work and give
right,
it to people
right,
who don't. I get
absolutely,
that. That's your whole
middle class
platform.
People, most of the people in the country ought to benefit from the tax cuts, not just the top, you know,
2%. Okay, everybody got the same percentage. If you make more money, you get a bigger chunk.
Right.
It's math, Jane Duker.
No,
it is simple math.
Oh, right. It's just
you
math.
Want,
just
you
like
guys,
tax-
no, you guys want to give a big, huge, major tax cut to the people who aren't even paying federal income taxes. That's not how it works.
Right. That's right. Yeah, no. What you're saying, even Donald Trump said the middle class should get a tax cut. How are you disagreeing with your own economic czar?
No,
your
I'm,
czar said they need a tax cut.
I'm not disagreeing with that at all.
Oh, okay. If they were doing so great, why would they need the tax cut?
Because we are opposed to confiscatory tax policies when you don't get a return on the donation you're making to the federal government.
Deficits.
Why is that hard to understand?
Why can't you just admit, Jane, that 90% of American citizens have gotten a tax cut under Barack Obama? Why can't you admit that unemployment is at 3.5%? Why can't you guys admit that African-American and Hispanic unemployment are at the lowest levels they've ever been at? Why can't you guys admit that wages are now rising higher than they have in American history for quite some time? But you know, I drive along St. Louis these days, and you know what I see? I see cranes. I see building. I see economic activity. I fly through the airport. I see people traveling again.
And we're getting an XFL team.
And we're getting an XFL team. And you didn't see any of these things during Barack Obama's entire 8 years because he was, again, the worst economic president in American history.
There you go.
And it worked so well for the Republican Party that the Democrats flipped 40 seats in the U.S. House.
Totally in line with historic averages. Big deal.
All right, we're all fired up here. It's a Reardon Roundtable for a Friday afternoon. We got the news coming up. Two more segments to go. It's all holiday cheer. Friday afternoons on KMOX.
Now, back to the Reardon Roundtable. Once again, your host, Mark Reardon on KMOX.
We are so full of Christmas cheer and other things here on the Reardon Roundtable this afternoon. Greg Keller, Jack Cardetti, Jane Duker. Before we get, and I want to get to Bush 41 and the week that just passed, but I want you, because we kind of skipped over it here and we alluded to it, the Missouri connection to John Kelly and the chief of staff job. Yeah. Jane, can you explain that to folks? Because we could have someone who is very involved in Eric Greitens' campaign, Nick Ayers, running the show at the White House.
Yeah, which you know, that's par for the course. The guy who was the architect of the dark money network of Eric Greitens, Nick Ayers, is chief of staff for Mike Pence, and he's set to be chief of staff for the president. So, I mean, you would expect that. You would expect the leader of the dark money network to be now in charge of the federal government. So, but that's good, because when the whole House of Cards comes down, he'll go with him. And that'll be fine. But I mean, really, this guy, he's 36 years old. He's worth tens of millions of dollars.
How did he make all his money?
Oh, advertising. He got into the
consultant, right?
Into the Republican Governors Association.
Are you worth 10 to 12, Cardetti?
I think it's just under that. I think it's a little under that. And I'm older than Nick Harris. How did this happen?
Aren't you a consultant?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm way past that number.
You're slouching on Friday afternoons on my show when you should be a multimillionaire.
Right. I mean, you could be running the place. So that is very fascinating, because I do think then that will, because there was issues as to whether he divested from all of his political interests when he actually went to the vice president's office, and he didn't for a long time, and they finally made him divest, but supposedly, we'll see. But now the microscope's going to be on him now, and so that's not going to be fun.
Yeah, we've all known guys like Nick Ayers, right? Which, if they play at a certain level, they can fly below the radar and everything will be fine. You get a little too close to the sun, and there is no closer place in the sun than the chief of staff to the president of the United States.
Especially when that president is Donald Trump.
Right, exactly.
But I'm sure he'll instill discipline in the White House. I'm sure they'll do a great job.
Nick Ayers will be able to do what everybody else is not able to do, which is to get this guy to act appropriately. And he'll be right on it.
I don't know. Sure. Maybe he'll just tie Donald Trump up in a basement or something.
By the way, that is not something that we know for sure is going to happen. But his name has been out there. Wall Street Journal did a piece. John Kelly, you know, there's always these denials about whether or not the resignation is going to happen or the firing. But I think that it would not surprise me. And that may be Christmas week or something like that, where you have some changes.
He's not been at work. He's not in the White House. And he and the president aren't on speaking terms. I suspect that's probably not the best.
Maybe it'll be before Christmas then, given those circumstances. Maybe. So, Greg, I'll start with you on this. The 41st president of the United States, the father of the 43rd president, George Herbert Walker Bush, with some strong connections here to St. Louis and Missouri, passed away about a week ago. We had the funeral in Washington, the private ceremony in Houston. A lot of great memories and storytelling of really a different time in politics, I'd say.
Yeah, it was, and some of the speeches that they gave were just fantastic. I thought George W. Bush's tribute to his father was fantastic. John Meacham was out there.
He was great.
Even the media has given George H.W. Bush a fair shake these days. I was actually just Googling some of the things that they said about him and have said about him recently. Politico has a headline here, "Is History Being Too Kind to George H.W. Bush?" The New Yorker has a headline, "The Media Got George H.W. Bush Wrong in Life and in Death." Just a good reminder that the only Republican that Democrats like is a dead Republican.
You know what? I mean, Democrats do think that H.W. Bush is pretty amazing, given what you have now. I mean, as bad as you thought it was under any Bush, I mean, this is like, you know, these guys in comparison to Donald J. Trump, you know, look really good. But I did love watching their family because they're a very tight-knit family. It was very sweet to see the kids and the grandkids. You can tell how much they love each other, how much fun they have together, how tight they are. And that was really nice to see. It was nice to see W. That speech was lovely. It was very human.
He did a great job.
He did a great job, and but all of them did.
Also, I mean, on the 60 Minutes, I don't know if you watched 60 Minutes with the other presidents, and they all did great.
They all did. And Alan Simpson was
hysterical. I love Alan Simpson. He's like one of my favorites.
That was when W did the line about, you know, my dad knew a good punchline. That's why he wanted Simpson to speak. I mean, it was warm.
I mean, obviously, in politics nowadays, experience is not trendy. It's not fashionable. But just look at the experience of public service that not, I mean, we think about him as a former president, but former CIA director, former ambassador to China, vice president, you know, he worked in all of those different fields. And it was, I think he's kind of one of the last of a kind that we'll
see. And they were nice to let Trump sit there. I mean, frankly, I mean, that was very big of them to let him come. And you could tell, I mean, Trump sat there with his eyes slit, barely open, with his arms crossed because it wasn't about him. I don't know how the guy sat there for 2 hours.
He was at a funeral, Jane.
I mean, 2 hours. Has anyone ever seen the guy sit for 2 hours? I want to know if this is the record.
And it was, well, you had that moment where he reached over, he shook the Obama's hands, and Bill Clinton was sitting right next to them. And he kind of looked over like he might extend a hand to Hillary. But can you blame her, Greg?
No,
I don't know if I would have done that
in
that
situation.
She's
just kind of cold and has no personality or something.
Yeah, that is weird.
It was weird, wasn't it?
Melania just looks at him like that, not just Hillary.
No, Hillary just sat there like a robot, which is weird because she's usually so warm and natural.
Yeah, well, and Melania is better friends with Barack than she is with the president.
I just want to remind everybody, George H.W. Bush did in fact vote for Hillary over Donald Trump because, quote unquote, he's a blowhard.
Exactly.
You, Keller, I got to give you a little credit here. You retweeted something. I took a screen capture of this from a guy named Notke BJ. I don't know who he is. At Notke BJ. These are the best contenders to win the presidency for the Dems, in my opinion. 1, Biden. 2, The Rock. 3, Tapwater. 4, Warren. 5, Lemon Mint Hookah Flavor. 6, Harris. 7, At Steak Om. I don't know that one. 8, Booker. 9, Paint Drying. 10, Sanders. 11, Nails on a Chalkboard. 12, Gillibrand. 13, Rat Dying of the Plague, and 14, Bloomberg. I think that's a pretty solid list for the Democrats.
Yeah,
at this
point. So you have literally like a list of actually like toxic things on that list. And then you also have things like, you know, lead paint.
You mean like Democrats who haven't pled guilty to felonies?
No, like Gillibrand, like every single person who's running in your party who is literally insane. Jane likes to talk about clown cars. You're going to have 40 absolute clowns, crazy socialist communists running for president for the next year and a half, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
And
all of them trip over themselves to get as far to the left as they possibly can.
And they get to run because they won't be in prison. That'll be the difference.
This is why Donald Trump is going to get another 4 years. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Well, see, I don't want to say smart, not with Jane, but you're relatively smart. Yeah. Do you not understand? You do, Jane. You get that group that we mentioned. No, I'm just saying, really, I'm being serious here. Who's going to beat him?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's pretty easy. I mean, almost any of them could beat him right now. Right. If you look at where his numbers are in the upper Midwest, in Iowa, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, and it was reflected in the governor's races. It was reflected in the congressional races. Donald Trump is in trouble. Yes, Donald Trump's numbers are decent here in Missouri, but in other places that he'll need to win re-election, he isn't even close to scratching the surface. So, yes, we'll have a ton of Democrats that won. And there's a reason that so many Democrats are going to win.
You know what will help those numbers? If you nominate someone like Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren, you get that. That's my point. You understand that that's going to turn people off?
You don't.
I'm fine. You thought that Hillary was a good candidate, even though you wouldn't admit it. You guys knew she was terrible. But you knew she was terrible. She apparently not better than him.
I mean,
you know who's in the White House right now, right?
Right. And I know that his chief of staff was also interviewing with the special prosecutor. Yeah, that usually doesn't end well. Your chief of staff is answering
under
oath.
Here's the thing, Jane. You are so obsessed with everything about Trump, you can't even answer a simple question. For a second here, don't mention the president's name. Don't slam the president. Don't make fun of him. talk about your ridiculous candidates for a second. Do you really think, name three candidates that you think are good quality candidates that you think can win enough electoral votes the next time around to beat Donald J. Trump?
We don't have to decide yet. That's the beauty.
But I just want you to name some people who you think might be good contenders here.
This will be great. Claire McCaskill. Claire McCaskill.
Who's that?
And she'll be good from the Midwest. I mean, we have a ton of people. Kamala Harris, she's probably very popular. I don't think Elizabeth Warren, I don't think she's going to do it.
Call her
I don't
Pocahontas.
Think Bernie, the old guy, will do it.
What about Uncle Joe?
Uncle Joe is very, Trump is really afraid of him because he's already been tweeting about him. So he's very worried about Uncle Joe. And Uncle Joe is very popular.
If Uncle Joe were 10 years younger, I think he'd present a big problem for Donald.
The other one that isn't being talked about a lot right now, I think Sherrod Brown, senator from Ohio, even though Ohio's gone really sort of to the right, sort of like Missouri a little bit. He easily won re-election.
Have you seen that dude's hair? Oh, wait.
He's been combing it lately, though. You can tell he's running
because he's actually found a comb somewhere. Totally be the hair presidency, presidential race. With Trump and him?
Yeah, that would be you wouldn't want the wind blowing during those presidential debates.
Look, to your point, though, here's what I think. You know, you got all these big names out there. We saw this with the Republicans, too. It might be more likely that someone grabs attention like a Sherrod Brown. I don't know if he's the guy to get people revved up. But if you go with the rock star ticket, like Beta, and who's the other name that's out there with him that everyone loves on the—I don't know that that's going to get it done.
The mayor.
Who's that?
Gillum. I mean, he's, he met with Obama. I mean, but I don't even think we know who it's going to be yet. And so I'm not that worried about it.
Well, no, because you have 40 candidates. We'll take a break. We're coming back with more. It's a Reardon Roundtable for a Friday on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is the Reardon Roundtable with your host, Mark Reardon, on KMOX.
But baby, it's cold outside.
Jane, I hate to trigger you by playing Baby, It's Cold Outside. She just walked out of the studio in protest because this is a Me Too moment. Just by...
Who is saying that?
Stupid people are saying it. That's who's saying it.
So, I mean, I know that makes you happy to pick out the
fringe. No, it doesn't make me happy. It frightens me a little bit. And I do think that there's plenty of people that are both on the left and the right that think that's nutty, right?
Yes. That's why it's stupid fringe. I don't even know why we're...
Why does it get so much attention then? You know, and maybe it's people like me talking about it.
Because you guys love to say, here's the crazies. And, you have your crazies, we have ours, and this is an example of that.
Well, then you had the Princetonian a cappella group. What are those guys called again?
Dogging the Tiger Tones. Kiss a Girl. Dogging Little Mermaid.
What?
How? I mean,
what have we come to? Wait, you guys don't know that yet? Okay, so
what are we talking about?
The male a cappella group.
Have kids, you know.
All right, the male a cappella group at Princeton. Mm-hmm. The Tiger Tones. I can't remember that for whatever. You know why I can't remember it? Because I always want to go back to Pitch Perfect and talk about the...
will not do Kiss the Girl from Little Mermaid.
Oh my because gosh. There was a girl who protested, wrote a letter to the Daily Princetonian. Now, in fairness, minor fairness, it's the song, but it's apparently the performance itself. When they do it, they grab someone from the audience, and it's performance art, and people are put off by that. But look, the whole thing.
Oh no,
they're
saying they're forced,
right?
That whole scene of Kiss the Girl, and then they point to a girl, and obviously they have no choice as to whether they go on stage and get kissed. And so that's that's what we're dealing with here. So we're declaring war on Little Mermaid. I can't even fathom.
And then
that.
Let's talk a little bit here about Kevin Hart too, because the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences did not have an Oscar host, which is very rare. You don't usually wait until the end of the year to pick that host, but nobody wants the job. No. And Kevin Hart decided to take the job, and then all of a sudden, I mean, the columns were ready to go and fire out on Twitter as soon as he was named. He's homophobic. He did this. He said this on Twitter. He said this on Instagram. So he ducked out. He did it in a very classy way. But here's what I'm annoyed by this week. Every time I hear a story about this, it refers to homophobic jokes by Kevin Hart. No, they were jokes. they referenced gay people. He said things that were funny. If you don't think he's funny, don't go to his show. Don't watch his specials. You don't have to watch the Oscars. But what he did, and this is what's frightening about what's happening in this country right now, he told jokes about a sensitive topic. Sure, that's what comedians do on a regular basis. So if a black comedian makes fun of white people, which, by the way, they do all the time, and oftentimes it's very funny, is that racist? Because that's where we're heading. You can't criticize anyone.
I wouldn't
anyone.
Be a comedian right now.
Well, I have a lot.
I wouldn't either. Jerry Seinfeld won't even go to a college campus.
I have a lot more problems with what comedians are doing than saying, right? The Louis C.K. stuff is an issue.
Right.
That guy is a creepster.
But that's not just a comedian thing. That's
exactly.
I used to run CBS, my former company thing, right?
Yeah.
With Les.
The other thing is, I'm not sure who's going to host the Oscars ever again.
Why would you?
I don't know.
Why would you? And look, I'm not defending what he said. First of all, from what I saw, and maybe I didn't see every comment, but from what I saw, the comments were not that bad. I mean,
no, they're not bad at all.
It was something along the lines of,
they were jokes.
Worried about his son being gay. Well, I mean, that's hard. Yeah. I mean, it's hard. It's hard to be a minority. So, yeah, I mean, there are things that have been said about that community that have been far worse than that. And I think we've all gotten more sensitive to that. That's okay. That's a good thing. But I don't know why you would be a comedian anymore, because nothing is funny.
Well, that goes back to the fringe, because I have many gay friends who aren't outraged. They're not outraged by any of that stuff. And they agree. And these are lefties, by the way. Of course, they're not necessarily conservative Republicans. They agree with some of this stuff that's gotten so completely out of control. But I also think that some of it, now I'm going to put that whole thing on the Academy, because they should have seen it coming and maybe not picked him. But we've gotten to the point where everybody apologizes for everything. Can we not just stand up and say, no, I'm not going to apologize for that, because there's nothing to apologize for?
Or, you know, he said, I don't feel that way. It was what else? And I sort of appreciate that he just said, you know what? I'm not dealing with this. I'm done. See ya.
And he's one of the rare, really, really good guys in Hollywood.
And
who lifts people up. Does a ton
right.
of charitable stuff. Is positive 99.9%
of the time.
Supports
women. Supports other minorities.
Everyone loves this guy.
Right.
He's friends with The Rock. I mean, you don't get much better human being friends with Dwayne
Johnson.
The thing
about Kevin Hart is, years ago, I didn't have a lot of interest in him, and I wasn't sure if he was funny or just annoying based on some of the early movies. But the dude is a mogul. He is a mogul. He has his you-know-what together, and he knows what he's doing in Hollywood. He's a big-time producer, and he's a powerhouse force in Hollywood.
And
he didn't need this. He didn't need this
right.
at all.
That's why he said, I'm done. See ya. Bye-bye. And that shows real power, is when you can say, I don't need this.
And his tweet or the Instagram message, I think, ended in the way, hey, no hard feelings, Academy. I hope we work together again. So he was very classy in the way
he's always classy.
That he went out. Mm-hmm. Look, this isn't too tough even for the Oscars. Here's what they can do. And they probably won't, because they don't do smart things, but you can have an award show without a host. You really can. You can say, here's the person coming up. You just have your celebrities come out to hand up the awards. You do your montages. You don't have to have a big funny ha-ha opening. And then you reduce the show by maybe 2 hours.
But you know how it is. Well, they're trying to promote the show, and part of that is getting buzz around who the host is, or who's going to play what roles. That's part of why you have a host, and that stuff is because you get the pre-show buzz for weeks. People, radio hosts like yourself, talk about it.
Tina Fey, and who was the other woman?
Amy Poehler.
They were the best.
But if you want to increase, here's the problem with the ratings. You can have great hosts, big name hosts. Jimmy Kimmel last year was down 20%. One of the reasons is because of the films that are nominated. Now, if you look at the group of movies that is being awarded nominations right now, Golden Globes yesterday, Critics' Choice Awards that I vote in will come out next week. You got Black Panther. That's a popular movie, made gazillions of dollars. Mary Poppins is really good, and when people see it, they'll realize that. So if you have movies like that that are nominated,
that
and again, I'm not making the case that you should nominate movies simply because they're popular, but if they're good movies and they're popular, where I think the Academy voters have drifted away from some of that because they're not as important, that will bring people to the television on Oscar night, because you'll have kids watching saying, hey, will Mary Poppins win? Will Emily Blunt win? The ratings will go up if you have movies like that as part of the ceremony.
Hey, did everybody catch the real slick humble brag there, where Reardon got to say that he gets to vote for this stuff? I thought that was really good.
Well, I get to vote for SAG, but that's not Critics' Choice.
Keller and I don't get to vote for
Critics' Choice. That's the one where they give out the big surfboard to the winner, right?
We should definitely do that.
That was funny. That was really
is that Nickelodeon or MTV, by the way?
I don't know. But
what did I just cite?
When do Keller and I get to vote on these kind of things?
Right. Do they slime you?
Yeah, that's the one where they get slime.
They need to have the slime. They need to bring the slime.
Mark, what do you actually get to vote on?
By the way, that is not a... a gig that anyone would ever turn down. The host of the, whatever they call those Nickelodeon awards,
oh,
where you get slime because people love
those,
that.
Those are more popular.
So I am a member of the Broadcast Film Critics Association. We have the Critics' Choice Awards, which will air on A&E this year, and also the St. Louis Film Critics. So
there you go.
Are you clapping? He's now, mildly clapping.
Oh,
and I vote in SAG. I vote in SAG, too.
Actually, it's a theater clap.
They're
I think,
on, when, that's when on I TNT, right?
SAG Awards are usually on TNT. All right, yep. I got nothing else today. Games. That's all. We got it all in there. There were a couple of topics that I'm kind of bored with anyway, so we won't talk about them. But we're getting toward the end of the year here in Missouri and the roundtable, so we'll have to do a little wrap-up show in a couple of weeks as well. But I thank you for participating today. Jane's going to help out in the next hour. Greg's going to go buy some socks.
No, I'm not.
He's war on socks, man.
It's the war on socks.
I'm still kind of bad. It's like 17 degrees
right
now.
This is right out of the Preppy Handbook. I mean, this
it really is.
Not, is.
Yeah. No, you are on the cover of the Preppy Handbook. Yeah. It's good, though. I mean,
there's an inverse correlation between hair gel and socks. You figured this out?
That's actually a really good
point.
It's
not incorrect. Yeah.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. The
Cardi,
more gel you have,
on this panel,
the less socks you have to wear.
You make such insightful observations.
Wow, that is,
I have to keep inviting you back, right?
Mark, you know, he's a professional communicator.
I'll just leave it at
that. My mom's so proud right now.
I'll just leave it at that. All right, Greg Keller, Jack Cardetti, thank you so much for being on the panel. Jane's going to hang out for a little bit. So the Grammy nominations, Jane, came out today as well, and you've heard of pretty much none of them, but we'll run that down.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
And then we have Stephanie Barron. She is a lovely actress from St. Louis, and she's married to the director of the new film Big Kill, which is going to play tonight, 7:15 at Marcus Chesterfield. There's still tickets available for that, and Stephanie and Scott will be there talking about the movie. Jason Patrick's in this movie. Christoph Sanders, who's in the show Last Man Standing, is very funny in that show. This is a more serious role. And Danny Trejo, one of the great character actors out there. So great cast. It's an old-fashioned Western, Big Kill. So we'll talk about that in the next hour. And then Paul Goldschmidt introduced today over at Busch Stadium. Everybody is buzzing about that, of course. And Chris Raby sat down with him and did about a 12-minute interview. And he's paying me to air that on my show this afternoon. There's a cash transaction involved, not unlike Scott Faughn when he drops off sacks of cash. So I am going to play that about 3:35 this afternoon on KMOX. That's still to come.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.